This is gonna be fun.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, and I'm your host, Fran Lewis. And this is going to be so fantastic. We are here with New York Times author Tess Gerrinson, and we're going to talk about one of the most unusual, most fantastic books I've read in a long time, The Shape of the Night. And I have to tell Tess something, I don't think she realized it. An ending so startling and a house that casts its own spell when you visit Tucker Cove, would you want to go inside Brody's Watch and meet The Shape of Night? I don't know if you received the award I sent you by email for your book.
Oh, no, I didn't.
I sent it as the new 2019 best paranormal book ever.
Oh,
I
God.
Know.
Well, I've been traveling for the last couple of weeks, so maybe I missed it.
Oh, it's I'll resend it if I it's right here.
Okay,
I've
yes,
got it
please
right
do.
Here. I will. It says, outstanding paranormal psychologic press center to Tess Berenson for The Shape of the Night. And my publisher did it, so it came out good. No, seriously.
Okay. Oh, great.
because Fran doesn't do artwork. No, not at all. So,
neither do I.
So how did you decide on the setting of the book, and how did you create the history behind Brody's Watch? This is so interesting. It's so different from all your other books. That's why I read it in, like, Zap Time. Seriously?
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes writers, we get tired of doing the same thing over and over again, whether it's police procedurals or you know, romantic suspense. I had this story in my mind for 35 years. I had written a screenplay based on the story of a woman who rents a haunted house and falls in love with the ghost who lives there, but he turns out to be an incredibly dangerous demon. But I didn't do anything with that script. I stuck it in my closet, and then years later, I pulled it out again and thought, wow, I still love this idea of a forbidden love with somebody nobody else can see. So let's turn it into a novel. And that's that was the jumping off point for The Shape of Night, idea of, who could be a perfect lover, more perfect lover than a ghost? He knows what you want. He keeps your secrets. It's something that happens late at night that nobody else has to know about. So that's where it started. But then, of course, I wanted to add the thriller element. And the thriller element is that women have died in this house. Who's responsible?
I know. It's so scary. It's like I said. And you know, yet as you're reading the book, you want to go in the house anyway.
Yeah,
we're
all attracted to dangerous men. There's something about a dangerous man or a dangerous house. There's something about it. And I was playing a little bit with that choice that women sometimes have to make between the nice guy who's stable and who can give you everything that you practically need, and then there's the bad boy. And that is really the heart of a lot of romance novels, is how we tame the bad boy. So this is a variation of that theme.
I know. Some people actually look for that kind of relationship, and they don't realize it's toxic, but they want to give it a chance.
It's dangerous, and unfortunately, a lot of women do choose the bad boy, and they come to regret it.
Well, let's see what happens. We're not going to tell anybody what happened.
No.
So tell us about Ava, and why was she – it's almost like a magnet, the house, for her. It's like she's so drawn to it.
Yeah, well, first of all, Ava is really troubled. She's done something she's feeling really ashamed about in Boston. And this is, in a way, an escape. She wants to get away from her old life and try and forget what she's done. So she rents this house in a little town in Maine. It just so happens I live in that state. So she finds she shows up at this giant mansion that she was not expecting. The house has come up for rent unexpectedly. It's at a very inexpensive price. But she, her first view of the house was, oh my gosh, this looks like, first of all, too much house for me, and second, there's something about this house that scares me. Then the realtor opens the door, she steps in, and all her fears seem to disappear. She gets this sense that the house wants her to stay there. And that's how she ends up in this house.
That's scary. That is scary.
But well, you know, a lot of us have...
She feels unwelcome at first, too. She doesn't know. She can't
She doesn't know until she steps in and she feels like something has changed. You know, a lot of us have instant reactions to certain homes. You know, if anybody's gone house hunting or apartment hunting, they walk in and a place feels right or it feels wrong. There's no logic to it. It just seems like some houses have these vibes, and I think that's what Brody's Watch has. It has a vibe in which some people feel welcome and some people do not.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I moved up here, when I lived in the Bronx all that time, I was like, every morning I got up and go, why am I here? It was because of my mom with Alzheimer's. There was just something about that apartment when I moved up to the 17th floor from the 7th that just everything was wrong. Do you feel it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know what it is. It's an instinct something. There's a reason that Ava feels strangely about this house. Later she finds out that every woman who's lived there has died there. And the previous tenant has left the house abruptly and broken her lease. So now she begins to wonder, who was the previous tenant? Why did she leave? I need to talk to her to find out what's wrong with this place. But soon at night, Ava begins to see what's wrong with the place. There's somebody else living there. There's somebody else living there or something else living there.
I know, that's just scary. That's even scarier. So why was she there? What did she have to do with the cookbooks, and how did you create the recipes? Because she loves cookbooks and whatever. That's my favorite. And I can't cook to save my life. I don't even know what a knob of an oven looks like, and I'm getting hungry as I'm reading the book.
Well,
seriously.
You know, I come from a restaurant family. My father had a restaurant, and he was a professional cook. So I grew up with food being so important. I mean, good cooking is so important in our household. I love to cook. And I'm also, I get a lot of comfort from being in the kitchen, you know, chopping vegetables, smelling the steam. There's a lot of sensuality to cooking if you let yourself be enveloped by it. And that's part of the theme of this book is sensuality, whether it's the smells, the tastes of the kitchen, or whether it's what you experience at night in your alone in your bedroom. So Ava, and she's a sensual woman in so many different ways, and the cooking is just part of what she does. Now, as for the recipes, a lot of those I picked up from old cookbooks. I would go online and find, you know, traditional cookbooks, recipes, the beef stew, for instance, recipes with lobster. I mean, I live in the state where lobster is king, so I'm familiar with that. But I also chose recipes that felt right for the scene. When Ava first arrives in Brody's Watch, it's cold, it's foggy. She needs comfort, and so she stands at the kitchen and just quietly makes a pot of risotto. And anybody who's made risotto knows it involves standing and stirring for half an hour, and you just become very meditative, and that's what she needed at that moment.
Well, I could tell you very honestly that the world is much safer without me at the stove. Seriously.
Yeah.
Yes. My sister tried to explain to me once how you make chicken parmesan. She even put on the thing, don't forget to go to the butcher and buy the chicken cutlets. I go, do I have to really do that? But you know what? But I never knew that there was such a thing, because my mother would never let me in the kitchen, my grandmother either. I never knew there was such a thing as processed breadcrumbs. So when I put the thing in, I used Wonder Bread. It was Not only did I use Wonder Bread, it looked like little marshmallow balls and whatever.
Oh,
and
no.
I stuck it in the oven, and Miss Brilliant over here turned the oven on the wrong way, and the thing self-cleaned. It was just so beautiful.
Oh my gosh, it must have been like a piece of charcoal at the end.
Oh my God. I couldn't open the oven. I said, I'll have to check it to see if it looked all right, whatever.
Right.
It turned gray. I said 45 minutes later, I said, this explains why Fran doesn't cook ever. And
well,
and I had company coming.
I will say that your mother did you a disservice by not letting you in the kitchen. I think every child should be taught to cook, male and female.
My sister could cook, but she did. They didn't trust me to go anywhere near a stove or anything like that. And my grandmother, you couldn't even get a glass of water or anything unless you asked permission from her.
Oh, no.
Her kitchen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And my mother said, you know, you were such a disaster. I said, it's a good thing I'm smart because what am I going to tell you? And that's probably why I learned how to do, you know, takeout a lot.
Right. Well, that's a blessing, a modern blessing. But no, I think that those people who have been cooking all their lives, and you know, if they read this book, they're going to say, "Yeah, I recognize myself in this kitchen." And it's part of the fun, I think, of reading a book that has descriptions of food or descriptions of what it's like to work in a kitchen is you do get hungry, and good writing should make you hungry.
It did. The problem was I couldn't reproduce those things, so I had to go call somebody to bring something that looked like that. No, seriously.
Okay.
So tell us about Tucker Cove and the people that live there, because that was an odd group of people that live in this town. They were interesting.
Yeah, it's a reflection of I live in a very small town in Maine, so a little there's a little bit of that in the story. What is it like to live in a town with people who've been there all their lives, and you're the outsider? Coming in as an outsider can feel uncomfortable. Do they ever accept you? Do they ever tell you their secrets? In this little village, Ava is definitely the outsider, and people don't want to tell her some of the terrible things that have happened in this town. They don't want to talk about the past, and she has to dig at the truth. She goes to the historical society where she learns a bit here and there. She learns a bit from the realtor, but she still gets the feeling that that town has closed off any information sharing from her. So that's another source of tension in the story. There's a little town, there's a house that's uncomfortable for her, and there seems to be a ghost who shares her bedroom at night. So why does she stay? I think she stays because she is seduced by the idea of having this lover who will keep her secrets.
You know, the real estate agent, I wasn't crazy about Donna at all.
How
do you create her? I mean, she's not a very nice person. I mean, I like Ava's cat. We have to say I love the cat. But I don't love Donna. I didn't love her at all. She just, like, there was something odd about her that bothered me.
Well, she's a reflection. I imagine her as just being a very brisk and cool businesswoman. She, you know, she's there to do her job. Maybe she's not warm. Maybe she senses in Ava some competition. There's a handsome bachelor doctor in town, and the realtor obviously has her eye on him, and here comes this beautiful woman from another town who now catches his eye. So there's some competition between them, and I think Donna is not happy about that.
I know, I think if she could have strangled Ava, she probably would have, or sold her a house someplace else. I think sorry she rented it to her, poor thing. Oh, I suffer.
And the cat. Well, I know, you mentioned the cat, because that cat is a major character.
I love the cat.
I love this cat, too. The cat is a Maine Coon cat, and those who are familiar with the breed know they are very large cats. They have little tufts on their ears. They often have multiple toes, six, seven, eight toes, and they're very intelligent. So this is Ava's cat. He's 26 pounds of fat and fur, and his name is Hannibal, and he's named after Hannibal Lecter, the serial killer, because he's a very good mouser. So the cat seems to see things or sense things that Ava doesn't. Mm. And those of us who've been around pets, I think there's nothing more freaky than being in a quiet room with your cat or your dog and having them suddenly startle and look around like they're frightened, or hearing your dog suddenly let out a growl, or your cat's back come up with the fur standing up. It's like, what do they see? What do they know that I don't know? And so when Hannibal does that, it kind of freaks out Ava.
It freaked me out too. But a smart little cat, though.
Yeah, he's a smart cat. He causes a lot of the plot to move forward.
So tell this Charlotte, who used to live there, why did she want to talk to her?
Well, you know, Ava's having all these strange experiences in this house. She's seeing what looks like a man. She's seeing what looks like Captain Jeremiah Brody, who built the house. And Ava is worried that she's going crazy. Now, it's true she does have a drinking problem because she's, again, trying to forget this secret shame that is you know, so destroying her life. And now that she worries about her sanity, she wants to know if the previous tenant experienced the same thing. Because if you see a ghost and you worry about your sanity and you find out that somebody else has seen the ghost, it makes you feel better. It makes you feel like you're not going crazy. So she has to find the previous tenant. And the problem is the tenant, nobody knows where she is. She packed up and left, and she's vanished.
She was smart, she did. I mean, I know there are people that complain that they hear voices or they close their eyes and they see a ghost or something like that.
Yeah.
Or you wish you could see somebody that's dead that comes alive. Or you talk to somebody and you pray that they answer you, but they really don't. But you think they do.
Well, you know, I think most of us want to believe in ghosts, don't we? I mean, I think it gives us a sense of hope that there's an afterlife. And part of the research I did was looking at ghost lore, you know, looking at haunted houses in the state of Maine and finding out what do you do if you think your house is haunted. There are such things as ghost hunters. Most states have, they tend to be little organizations just to help people. And if your house is haunted in Maine, you can contact the local ghost hunters and they will come and scope out your house with their equipment. They do it for free. They do it. They're volunteers. And they do it because they're fascinated by the possibilities of the afterlife. So that's what Ava does. She has to call a ghost hunter to find out whether she's, again, if she's crazy or not. Now, I don't believe in ghosts, but my mother did. My mother saw ghosts as a child. So I grew up with all this lore. And everywhere I talk, you know, people I talk to here in Maine, everybody has a haunted house story. So it just seems universal.
Some people actually think the whole world is haunted. And they just
believe in an afterlife, then everybody who's passed on before us has gone somewhere. Some of the haunted house stories here are really kind of, you know, I've done a couple of videos here. You can find them on YouTube. One of them was there's a haunted movie theater in the state of Maine, and my son and I went up to interview people who have had experiences in this movie theater.
Oh, nice.
So the story is that a woman committed suicide by jumping off an upper balcony in the theater, and that she still haunts the place, and that she's a very angry ghost. She does all kinds of mischief, and everybody who's worked in this movie theater has experienced something strange. One of the women was working late at night after the theater had closed, and she was cleaning up the snack bar, and a door just flew open and banged against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And she was scared. She had no idea what had happened. And I thought, well, yeah, that's okay. So that's an interesting story. And she said, do you want to see the security video? And so she shared the security video, and there it was. You could see her working behind the counter. The door flies open, and the girl runs away. So it's not a story, it's on video. There are unexplained things. Maybe there must be some logical explanation for it, but it's the kind of thing that does make you wonder.
I know, this sounds like a good topic for your next movie besides Island Zero. That was really good. Seriously.
Oh yeah, we are making another horror film that we'll be shooting in 2021.
Oh, that's good. I can't wait to watch it. I actually had to get my husband to watch the last one with me. It was so scary, but it was really good, though.
Well, you know, it turns out my son and I love to tell stories on, you know, via movies. So we are finishing up our latest. We have a feature documentary that we're finishing up now. I think I might have told you about it, about the centuries-old relationships between humans and pigs, and the name of the movie is Pig.
Oh, nice. You have to send me a copy of that so I can actually watch it and be brave enough to see it.
Oh, this isn't scary. This is a documentary. So,
good.
It's
even better.
It's a fun movie with a lot of pet pig owners and pig hunters, and just an exploration of what is this animal and what makes it unique.
That's cool. As a matter of fact, my nephew has one as a pet. Yep, he does. I don't know what.
Well,
but he
they're
does.
Very smart.
I guess. What happens when they find a body washed up, and how come they can't figure out who it is?
Well, the body has been in salt water for a couple of weeks, and so it's pretty much unidentifiable. All they know is that based on the size, it looks like a woman. And this becomes important to Ava in her investigation of Brody's watch, the house, because she thinks it may be relevant to what she's seeing. And it brings up also the history of all these deaths. Who are these women who are dying in this house? Who's killing them? What is killing them? And now she's already in love with Captain Brody. She's already got this relationship with this ghost. She looks forward to seeing him at night. Now she's supposed to be afraid of him. Well, this is, again, that push-pull of attraction and fear of the bad boy, and she's facing it right now, except the bad boy just may be dead.
She didn't seem afraid of him, though. I mean, she just was drawn to him like a magnet. She couldn't even get him out of her head at times. It was scary.
Yeah, but you know, again, it's this weird attraction and seduction of a very you know, really attractive man. And she's not afraid of him because he has already assured her that nothing wrong will happen. There's this line that kind of echoes throughout the story that becomes very, very relevant at the end. He says to her, "Under my roof, what you seek is what you will find." He knows what she's there for. He knows what she needs, and that's what she's going to find by the end of the story.
I know. That's, like, scary. Wait till they figure out what happens at the end of the story. I can't tell them that. So,
well, you know, the other question is the ghost real? I mean, I think readers are going to come away with different interpretations.
Is he really real? Is he alive and she just visits her and she thinks he's dead? Or is he going to evaporate into the air? I wondered that, too, but...
Or is it all in her mind? Because there are some things about her that make you wonder just how reliable a narrator she is. Yeah.
Well, I just read Brian Freeman's new book, River Falls, Thief into River Falls. And I read the book and I didn't want to tell him that I figured out the main thing that happened in the story. And this girl, you know, has a son, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, you wonder, is she imagining the whole thing? Did it really happen? Is she reliving what happened in the past, or is it happening in the present? It was scary.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I figured out, I said, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. This is what she really thinks. Oh, wow.
Well, I think that's the real challenge for writers, is to give your readers something beyond just the typical whodunit. Give them something that has different interpretations, and it's up to the reader to decide or to decipher what is really happening. And I've had such interesting reactions to this story, and it's funny, the men and the women come away with different reactions. The men will tell me very logically why they believe what they believe. And they will point out the clues that I purposely left in the story. They're spotting them, and the women are more like, well, it's a love story, and I want to tell them it's a psychological suspense story. So go back and look for the clues.
It's a lot more than that. Wait till they read my review. It's really different. It's almost like the house is sort of telling you what you want, what it wants you to feel, in a sense. That's how
right,
I feel.
Well, the house is the house the thing that's haunted, or is Ava the thing that's haunted?
Yeah.
And the other theme that comes up, and this was the original title for the book, it was Shame, and of course my publisher hated that title, so we didn't use it. But that's the main thing that is the theme that's going through this story, is how feeling incredibly guilty or shameful about something you did will change your life, how it affects everything you think, everything you see, how you sleep. It can make people depressed. It can turn them to drugs or alcohol. And in some cases, it can lead to suicide. So this is a really tough burden for Ava, what she has done. And she keeps pushing it away so that it's only later on in the book that you find out what she's ashamed of. It becomes more obvious why she why the ghost comes to her in the form he does.
It's scary, but also it's like it's almost the title of the book, The Shape of Night. The night means so many things too. You can actually read into a whole bunch of different reasons why that actually fits the book better than the type that you wanted. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I give all credit to my agent for coming up with that title. We sure had a lot of trouble coming up with that title.
So that title actually fits if you really think about it and think about the fact when things happen, it happens mostly at night.
Yeah.
And different things come out at night. Yeah, so that made, to me, that makes sense. Okay, that's for good. So she goes to the post office. One thing about Ava, when she wants to know something, she's going to know it. So she sends letters to the post office, and she can't understand why Charlotte hasn't answered her. And that becomes, you know, a major thing for her also.
Yeah, so Charlotte is the woman who was renting the house just before her, the woman who fled suddenly from that house. And Ava's trying to track her down, and nobody knows where she's gone. So she goes to the girl's apartment in Boston, and nobody's seen her there either. And it's only later that she discovers that Charlotte's mail has piled up in the local post office in the main village, and now she thinks, this is really bad. Something really bad has happened to Charlotte, and where is she?
Tell us about, she goes to the historical museum, and she learns more about Brody, and I love Mrs. Dickerson, and she tells her about the people that used to live there and their fate. And that alone, I'm surprised, make her want to go back, and she did.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I love historical, these little museums that you find in all these little towns. Almost every town in Maine has a historical society where they collect the history of the village and the people who used to live there. And to be able to see the being that you think haunts your house in his in his previous living form, that's what really shakes her, because you know, she can see the things he brought home from the sea. She can find out what ship he sailed on, which ship he died on. It's almost putting your imaginary lover into a real flesh and blood man. And I think that's one of the reasons she keeps going back to that historical center.
I know. I'm wondering, you know, everybody that reads this is going to picture him in a different way.
Yes, it's up
so
to
I guess
you.
Everybody's gonna think, what does she think he looks like? Because everyone that's gonna read this is gonna say he looks like this, he looks like that, he reminds me of Pierce Brosnan, he reminds me of Tom Selleck, he reminds me of this one. Well, whoever, who would she think he looks like? I mean, there's so many different descriptions of him that you can close your eyes and he might even look like Count Dracula.
Let's put it this way: he's your dream lover, whatever your dream lover might be.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's different. So tell us about Maeve and why she asks to meet with her to help her to find out. You know, you talked about ghost hunters and the research you did to make the scene authentic. So tell us about Maeve and how she helps her.
Well, Maeve is the ghost hunter who works, who helps people who think they have haunted houses. And in desperation, as Ava is wondering if she's going crazy, she reaches out to this Maine ghost hunting society, and Maeve comes to her house with her team of ghost hunters. Now, I have seen some of the equipment they bring with them. One of them is sort of an electromagnetic readout. So they apparently, when there is some kind of ghost activity, you'll see changes in this EMF little handheld device. And I walked through one of our so-called haunted forts, and with a ghost hunter who had one of those devices, and she would say, "You see, there's something in this room." So Maeve shows up, and she also sets up cameras throughout the house. And they have them roll. It's sort of surveillance cameras at night, and they spend the whole night. It's an exhausting thing to do. If you want to join ghost hunters, you can sign up for a night at the fort, this haunted fort in Maine, to spend the night with ghost hunters to see what anybody experiences. There have been a number of people who have thought they felt something or heard something, and I think they have had some strange videos, but. That's what happens in Brody's watch that night.
That's scary. So why did Maeve want Ada to leave. She keeps telling her, "Don't stay here. Don't stay there. You gotta
leave."
Yeah,
you know, that's true for a lot
that's
of
weird.
Ghost hunting. They want
yeah.
they don't want the clients around because it interferes with their instruments and their readings, and it adds a level of chaos to the whole operation. But Ava was not going to leave the house. She wanted to be there to witness it, and so she stays that night, and she herself sees nothing. And the next day, everybody thinks nothing really happened.
That's even scarier because then they're going to think she's crazy. So,
now she thinks she's crazy because nobody saw anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So tell us about Dr. Gordon. And
well,
Dr.
Gordon is
his own interest in now. Yeah, he's an interesting character, that's for sure.
Yeah, he is the local available bachelor, the perfect bachelor that everybody seems to have their eye on. She catches his eye, and it's clear that the realtor has her eye on him too. And this is the choice I'm pretty much giving you, the reader, to make. Do you go with the bad boy ghost, or do you go with a solid, good-looking, stable person? And it's a kind of choice that people are making right now, and not just women. You talk about what a perfect lover is. Think about a ghost, okay? He can't give you any diseases.
Mm.
Nobody, you don't have to introduce him to anybody. He's there when you need him. He knows what you want. He is, in a lot of ways, perfect. Well, this is happening now with robots. Men are like, they'll all have the option instead of having a relationship with a real human being. Maybe we go to something artificial, something online. Young men in Japan, they're not marrying in numbers that they used to. They're not having children because they're seeking attention. They're seeking affection online from things that don't really exist. The perfect woman is not human. In fact, it seems like they find the perfect women in online communities. So that's sort of the choice that Ava is making now between something that may be imaginary and a flesh and blood man who may be flawed.
Now, all of these other women that had died in this house, and they met this ghost too, they have a relationship with him also?
Well,
it's not just
maybe,
her.
Maybe we don't actually know because they're dead. So
yeah.
Ava can't talk to them. Yeah.
Ava can't. Poor Ava. She's really having a problem. So why did the doctor decide he didn't go for Donna? Poor Donna.
Well,
he
the
went
doctor's
for Ava.
Very particular.
Why?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I
you didn't like Donna, so why should he?
You never know, because she's very sneaky and dangerous. You have to go watch this girl. I'm surprised she didn't put something evil in the house just to be mean to Ava.
Well, that's a possibility. There are many possibilities in the story. And what you decide is what is going to be how you interpret it.
It's scary. So anyone that walks into this house that would want to live there or not live there would have a different kind of impression of it, right? No two people had the same type of experience in this house?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, God,
yep.
That's scary.
Well, it's like, we have a lot of sea captain's houses here in the state of Maine. In any little seaside village, the largest houses tend to be of people who were captains or who were ship's owners, because that's where the money came from in the old days. So a lot of these houses are still here. Many of them have been turned into bed and breakfasts. You can stay in one. And so I had a lot of models to choose from when I was describing Brody's Watch. Having been in a couple of these captains' houses as B&Bs, there's a very large inn here in my town. So a lot of them have multiple bedrooms. Many of them have what are called widow's walks. And there are these sort of outdoor decks on the top of the house. Now, the romantic view is that the widow would stand up there looking out to sea, waiting for her husband to return to her. The practical element of a widow's walk is it helps you put out a chimney fire. The house itself is based on what I see here. The views that Ava sees from her windows at Brody's Watch are very much the views that I can see from my office right now, because I live in a house that's right on the ocean.
So how did you come up with the cover of this then? It looks so real, and I can see it's Ava looking at the house.
Well, that's all to my publisher. It's all credit to them. I had told
them
nice. I was looking for a cover that goes back to the old Gothic novels that I used to love as a child. I mean, we don't see as many Gothics as we used to, but I remember reading, for instance, Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, or Jane Eyre. You know, those all have the same Gothic elements, which are pretty much three elements in a Gothic novel. One is a young woman. Mostly they're innocent, very often they're virginal, and they come to live in a house that is kind of creepy, and that's the second element, is the house.
Mm.
What is it about these large houses that make the heroine feel weird or make her feel threatened? And then the third element is the hero, the brooding hero who falls in love with a woman. So those all come into Gothic novels, and I was using those. I was borrowing elements from the Gothic novel for this story. We have the young woman. Now she's not innocent, and she's certainly not virginal, but she is a heroine. There's the creepy house, and then there is the brooding hero, except my hero may be a ghost.
Well, my favorite part of it is the pink clouds up on top, the pink part, because my sister loved pink. And every time I see a pink cloud outside, I tell her, say, hi, I'm glad you're watching over me. I mean, that sounds like a superstition, but it is, yeah. I see every so often in the morning, I feel like I need to be perked up, and I go like, oh, the clouds are pink. She's here. I'm going to have a better day. Maybe something better will happen from whatever. Or if they're red, I think about my mom and her heart. And I'm going like, yeah, but I had a show with a meteorologist, and he said clouds are different colors. He said, I'm not imagining it. They are different colors. But the pink, like, oh, my God, they're like perfectly beautiful, shocking pink. So then she gets a visitor from Simon. Why does Simon come and stay at over her house? He's the publisher, right?
Right. He's her editor. Now she's come
I like
to Maine.
Him,
yeah, I loved him too. She's supposed to be finishing up the cookbook she's writing, and she's come partly to test out her recipes and finish writing this book. But the book is way overdue. It's a year overdue. And so now her editor decides to drive up and just see what's up with Ava. He wants to see this house she's told him about. He wants to see whether her cookbook is making progress. So he shows up on her doorstep. It's the first house guest she's had in Brody's watch, and it's not a good night because Simon has terrible nightmares. He wakes up and he wants to get out of that house. He senses something is really wrong.
Ooh.
You know? Yeah. So, but I love about Simon though is that he's, you know, people, men who love food. I adore men who love food because they're really into, they're passionate. Okay. So Simon, he's worked in kitchens. He's now a cookbook publisher. They get together and they cook lobster together in the kitchen. And I love this vision of two chefs in the kitchen doing this little ballet. And really, if you've ever been in a restaurant kitchen and seen people at work, it's a dance.
Mm.
People, you know, waltzing around with their knives and everything else and producing these incredible things that come out of the kitchen and go to the customer's table. That's what Simon and Ava are doing. They used to cook together in a kitchen. Now they're colleagues, and they're once again doing this dance in her kitchen.
The only thing I get to watch on Saturday morning is the guy making me my oatmeal grits. He showed me how to do it. That's about it. And Frank won't let me go anywhere near trying to figure out how to do it myself. It's like, okay.
Okay, well,
no, my husband loves the kitchen. He loves to cook. But he cooks one thing for himself, and then he cooks something else that I'm allowed to eat. So it's like different, the poor thing.
Oh, wow. You're lucky. You're lucky you have a husband who does that for you.
Yeah, because I can only eat things that are soft and pureed. So he'll make something like that. Do you ever eat a mashed chicken burger? Seriously? or a pureed piece of pizza, whatever? No, seriously.
Oh, my gosh. So well, you know, there's a lot of nice soups you can eat then.
Yes, I can. That I could. As a matter of fact, the guy in the diner, I saw him at the car place the other day. He said, I made you a pea soup. Just come and get it tomorrow. We're going to save it for you. I'm like, thank God. There was so... What Charlotte, as a teenager, what is her background? And it says, what is the truth about Charlotte as a teenager who died in the house, for all because comes to light? Why does she still want to stay there? What happened to Charlotte as a teenager?
Well, the reason you're asking what why Ava wants to stay there after she finds out about Charlotte. Well, you know, at that point, she's kind of in love with the captain. She's in love with the bad boy.
Yeah.
And you know how hard it is to leave somebody you have this incredible passion for.
So she's got a fixation for this one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's dangerous, but she just can't leave him. And it gets down to, again, the choices that women make that may be dangerous for them. And she knows that.
What is his background? Who was she? Who was he before when he was not dead? Or was he dead?
He was a sea captain, yes. He was a captain of a ship, and he went down at sea. He was supposed to be an incredibly attractive man. All the local girls, you know, were like, their hearts were aflutter whenever he'd return from the sea. And he was a very an able captain who had made around-the-world crossings several times. Then he, you know, his ship went down in the Cape of Good Hope. And apparently his ghost has returned to the house that he built. So, yeah, a good-looking man who was a, you know, commanding officer on his own ship and lost at sea.
Oh, well. But I wonder if he sees, you know, more than one person that lived in the house or whatever, I wonder if they see him looking the same way. I wonder if he has, like, a different appearance. This is a great afterlife. I'm going to have some fun with some women in the house. This is really cool.
Yeah, I know. Well, see, this is the thing. You don't know if that's what they see. Are they seeing the real Captain Brody, or are they seeing what they've created in their own minds? It's a little bit like when you read this book, I wanted readers to be seeing it through a prism. Some are going to see the captain as a figment of Ava's imagination, or something that has happened because she drinks too much or because she's infected with cat scratch fever. Others are going to say the ghost is real, or they're going to say this is a demon who lives in this house and is feeding off the people who come to live in it. So there are several ways to look at what the captain is. I know what I thought, but you may think something different.
And nobody really knows why they died. That's the scary part. They just died there.
Yeah, it appears that most of the women.
That makes it even better.
Yeah, well, it appears that most of the women who died there seem to have died of natural causes. But how do you really know?
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't. But before I forget, on Tuesday I'm doing the last show for November, and then Fran's taking some time off. Alan Topol, T.J. O'Connor, Dennis Palumbo, and Jim Nesbitt. We're going to talk about how do you use your real-life profession in your writing. Alan is a lawyer, and T.J. is a consultant for different like the DEA and the CIA and all that stuff. Dennis Palumbo is a psychoanalyst, and Jim Nesbitt is a journalist. So it should be interesting. I'm also doing a special on December 12th on the opiate crisis. We're not going to talk about a book, but I've got four authors that are going to. I'm doing some research on the opiate crisis and why it is when you go to the doctor, the first line of defense is, would you like some Percocet, Oxycodone, or Vicodin? And the answer to me is no. There has to be other ways. And why is it so dangerous? There's a lot of articles out there on that. It's scary. So that's my thing. And the other thing I would like to do one, and I have to figure out who to ask to do this, probably in March or April, I want to do one on e-cigs and vaping and the danger of the fragrance cigarettes, because I think that's another thing that a lot of kids are dying from that also. That's my other brilliant idea for the day.
Well, those are really important topics, so I hope people will tune into those.
Yeah, I hope so, because my niece is in high school, and she had to do a report on vaping. And even she doesn't smoke or anything, thank God, or drink. She gets that from me. And I said, this is a really good topic that you picked, and it's scary. There's a lot of other topics besides books to talk about. So when Ava comes face-to-face with the truth behind the unexplained deaths, how does she react to it?
Well, she finally does decide to leave, because there's something that is seen by the ghost hunters on video afterwards. They don't realize that it's there until they see something on video. And now she becomes terrified because there is something really, really wrong with this house. And she tries, and she decides to leave. But that decision leads to something really, really dangerous that happens to her. And I don't want to go any further because then we're talking about spoilers.
No, nobody's allowed to know that. No. But there are other characters in the story that come. Who is Ben?
Ben?
Ben, yeah.
Oh, okay. Ben is a doctor who is helping her do these investigations. You know, he's the local town. He's the town doctor that other women have set their caps for, and he seems to be very interested in Ava. There are also some other characters. There are the two carpenters who work in the house. They have been repairing the turret upstairs. And she has started to use them as her food testers. Whenever she cooks a new recipe, she hands it to them, and they are helping her decide what should go in the cookbook. And they're kind of charming. I mean, there's an older man who's in his 60s, and then there's a young man who's in his 20s. And they both have become Ava's friends. So there are sort of multiple people that are finally coming to be friends of Ava, but who, you know, can she trust any of them? That's the real question as you get to the end of the story. Can you trust any of them to protect her from this ghost?
Can you trust anybody in the story at all? Seriously.
Well, that's true for any mystery novel, right? That's the way they operate.
That's scary. I mean, the fact that she's, you know, who wanted the house next? I mean, would anybody actually, nobody really knows the story about the house when they're going to buy it, right? Nobody really knows that.
Right.
Know
I mean, except for what
they're...
Well, the realtor has to tell the next owner of the house. And this is what, you know, I had actually pitched this to as a television series, not about Ava, because Ava finishes her character arc in the story, but a TV series about Brody's Watch. Every season, somebody else moves into this house with a story. Somebody comes to this house with their own desires and needs, and they're all seeking something, and the house is going to provide. So I love the idea of the house being the continuing character that people cycle through. It's something that I can't get anybody interested in, but it's a different sort of TV series where you'd have a changing cast every year.
Well, you could actually write a whole bunch of books on that too. Seriously.
Yeah, I could follow with the next tenant of Brody's Watch because there is a new one. Yeah,
that's right. There is a new one, and definitely be really interesting if the ghost comes or something else comes out. You never know.
Right, and it's another woman. The house seems to want women to stay there.
Well, what would happen if a man stayed there with a woman if they were married? Would it turn out? Would they kill the man?
Well, what's happened is that men don't seem to want to stay there. Right? Because her friend, her editor comes, and he immediately leaves the next morning because he doesn't feel comfortable there.
That is scary. So we have the other character that lived there, Aurora. What was her story? She used to live there also, besides Charlotte.
Oh, well, I mean, there have been multiple girls who stayed in this house, who have either left the house in a hurry or have died there. Mm. So it's that, you know, that history of a house. And this is one thing that makes a house feel haunted, is if you know people have died there. And even if there's no such thing as ghosts, I think that most of us have a sense when you walk into a house and you know a murder has happened here, that you don't really want to hang around. You don't want to buy this house. You don't want to live in this house. It just has these bad vibes. You know, I've traveled around the world always looking for ghosts. Mm. I'm curious about them. I've never seen one. But most of the places that are said to be haunted, yes, they've had some terrible history there. I think probably the most frightening place I went to was there. There was a KGB museum I went to where in the basement, they apparently more than 1,000 people had been executed down there. And they showed the chute where they would you know, get rid of the bodies. So you stand in the spot, and it's one room, and it's a concrete floor, and you just think 1,000 people have died here. They died here in terror. Do I feel anything? Now, I don't feel anything. It's just a clean museum basement. But just to know that was the last thing people saw, so many people, it's got to give a lot of people just this bad feeling.
So there are days that we just take a ride sometimes, and I look at different houses because we have, there's so many different types where I live. Well, I'm in Upper Westchester, and there were old communities and older houses. And yesterday we were passing by these houses, and I said to my husband, those are the backs of the houses. They look kind of weird to me. And some of them were, like, covered with trees, and some of them you couldn't even see the back. And some of them had steps that were creaking. And I was like, but, gee, I wonder who lives there. I wonder what their story is. It's scary. Yeah, because each house is so different. So even the big ones that are mansions, I go like, oh, is there a brothel in there? What are they doing in there? And the funny part is you never see anybody outside any of these houses.
Well, you know, again, do ghosts exist? I mean, I can tell you ghost stories from my mother's childhood.
Yeah.
And she was... She was there when the Japanese were bombing her hometown, and so the children were sent into the countryside, and my mother was staying at a monastery with other kids from the village. And in the middle of the night, she remembers, you know, going outside and seeing a woman crying in the courtyard. And as she approached, the woman dissolved right before her eyes and just vanished. So I asked my mom, well, how come I've never seen a ghost? And she says, well, it's because you live in the U.S. and the country is too young to have accumulated ghosts. So it sounded like a ridiculous explanation to me, but she saw them repeatedly as a child. And, you know, the word is that children are more likely to see these things, and maybe they're more open to it. Maybe somebody who's as skeptical as I am just will never see one.
No, I don't think I've ever seen one or heard one, but, you know, sometimes, you know, you close your eyes and you say, you could see the face of somebody. And I often wonder, I closed my eyes one day and I saw my sister's face. And then the other day, I think my nephew spooked me. He sent me a video of my sister at his wedding. And my sister died 9 years ago. And I'm going like, how could she be on my email? How could she be here? And she was saying something. She was talking, and it was, like, so eerie. It was going, like, but it was nice to hear her voice. It was nice to see that she was alive for 5 seconds or whatever. That's scary.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, as I said, I've been collecting ghost stories, and I've heard some pretty eerie ones. So if you believe in them, you're just going to see them. And if you don't, you know, you'll never believe in them, I guess.
I know. I don't believe that I was ghost, but you've walked down the street sometimes and you turn around and go like, he looks just like somebody that died. Or he looked like, I had somebody walk over to me and say, you look like, I said, don't tell me, I don't want to know. Please don't tell me I look like you, like you're dead. No, I don't want to know. So what's next for you besides the documentary? What's coming up?
Well, I'm working on a new novel having to do with my little town where I live in the state of Maine.
Nice.
It's an odd little town in which I've discovered that we have a large number of retired spies living in here.
Oh,
so I wanted to write a story that had to do with one retired female spy who's now in about, you know, late 50s or 60s. And what happens when she gets called back to service? What happens if she doesn't want to go back, but she pretty much has to go back? What is it like to be 60 years old, maybe your hip's a little sore, or maybe you just haven't worn high heels in 20 years, and now you've got to go back and do it again. So that's I love the idea of people with wisdom, people with experience, who have been forgotten by the rest of society, but it turns out are really invaluable. That's the idea.
I love that, because people that are older, sometimes you walk into a room and you ask. The one thing I hate is when somebody says to you, what's your date of birth? And I go, I have no idea. I really can't remember that. And they say, why? I said, because it's 5 minutes. If I tell you the truth, you're going to talk to me like I'm 4 or 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't tell them. And in a doctor's office, I'll just say to them, you could look it up by my last name and my address. If you can't figure that out, then maybe you've got a problem remembering information too. That gets me crazy. So that's great. That age is not. It's just a number. It doesn't mean it has nothing to do with intelligence. Seriously, and people don't
know
that.
And experience is underrated. So that's what I was going. And also, middle-aged women. You know, as we get over 50, we disappear, and people don't pay attention to us anymore. And I thought, wow, isn't that the perfect spy, the invisible woman?
Well, you see, I'm lucky. My nephews think I'm a teenager forever, and if they have no trouble with a term paper, they know who to call.
Yeah.
They don't care anybody. I'm the one, even at 2 o'clock in the morning. So where can everybody learn more about you and your work? Are you coming to ThrillerFest this year? Are you going to be there?
No, I'm not. I'm home working pretty much all the time, especially with the filmmaking that I'm doing with my son. I have a website. It's TessGerritsen.com. I'm also on Facebook, and I am on Twitter, at Tess Gerritsen.
Well, I'm excited because my new book, I wish it was, it's doing better, pretty good. It's called Silent Voices, and it's told from the point of view of the dead person behind the gravestone.
Ah, okay. Well, that sounds really creepy.
It is creepy. When my sister died, I went to the cemetery, and I asked her, Stone, if you could tell me the truth about why you had a heart attack and what happened that day, because there were question marks, what would you tell me? So then I walked around the cemetery, and I asked a whole bunch of people that are dead, you know, if you could tell me your story, did you do something wrong? Did somebody hate you? And there are five of them, and the first one has a true story about something that happened to one of the teachers in my school for real before she committed suicide.
Yeah.
So this one has six stories, and four of them I made up because of my warped imagination, and the first two are real. They really did happen. My grandmother's story in a Polish sterilization camp. The other one is my other grandmother, and one is about what happened to a child in the sixth grade, and guess who that was. It was interesting writing it. I'm going to write another one. And hopefully that more people will read it. Yeah. I just thought that there are so many people in the world that are bad and deserve to be behind the gravestone. And there are certain people that need to tell their stories so their voices are heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like a strange idea. I have no idea. But everyone that's read it in my family really thinks that I've lost it. What can I tell you? But I just think it's just unique. But your stories are even more unique. I can't wait to read this next one about a spy. That's going to be interesting.
Well, I'm looking forward to writing it. So, anyway,
thank you so much.
It's great talking to you.
Thank you so much, everybody. It's beautiful outside. It's only 25 degrees. It's really not that cold. So have a nice day, and bye.
Thanks a lot, friend. Bye-bye.